Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Wild, wild weekend in the NBA playoffs. The Trailblazers, I'm not going to say that a game one is a must win, but that was a very good game for them to win. They're up on OKC 1-0. Terry Stotts, the head coach of the Trailblazers, joins me in the second hour. In hour number three, we're talking hockey. A former goalie, NHL Network analyst, Kevin Weeks, joins me. So, Robert Lucetic, Terry Stotts, Kevin Weeks. Phone lines open, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. I will get to you honks soon. Because, as always, you honks are making it about you. I want to start with the guy who it's really about, though. The cat. Because the cat did it. Tiger Woods won the Masters. Nobody has said that for 14 years. Well, they've said Tiger Woods won the Masters, but it was always in the context of ancient history. Like, Tiger Woods won the Masters for the last time back in 2005. But then he did it again yesterday. Tiger Woods won the Masters. And you all know the numbers by now. 5. The green jacket's now in his closet. 11. The years since his last major. 14. The years since his last Masters. 15. The number of total majors. 0. The times that he had ever come from behind on Sunday to win a major. At least until now. Because yesterday's comeback from down 2 shots through 11 holes was not about the comeback from down 2 shots through 11 holes on Sunday at Augusta, but rather, it was about the comeback from everything that he put himself through. And the fact is, it was unreal. It was unreal to me. It was surreal, and it was totally real. Like, unreal in the sense that we were never going to see something like that ever again. We were never going to see Tiger Woods win again. I mean, hell, it wasn't that long ago. This guy was having trouble just walking, having trouble just sitting up in a chair, having trouble doing pretty much everything. Winning a golf tournament, let alone that golf tournament, was completely out of the question, not a part of the equation. This dude really was dead cat walking, and he would have told you as much. In fact, he did. But then it started to change. He was top 10 at the British Open last year. He was second at the PGA Championship. He won the Tour Championship. And at that point, it almost incredibly felt like it was a matter of if and not when Tiger would get that other major. And then he did. And to me, that's the surreal part. Because yesterday felt so familiar. Everybody around him melting down. Tiger remaining locked in and focused. The red shirt against the familiar background of Augusta National. Surreal, because we were always supposed to see Tiger get to 15 majors and beyond. Remember, it was never a question of if he ran down Jack, but rather how small was the bear going to be in the cat's rearview mirror? 18. Hell, there was talk of 25 at one point. But when he stalled out on 14... for more than a decade, most assumed that that was exactly the number he was going to end up on. And then came yesterday. We'd seen this all before. The only difference was less hair on his head, more gum in his mouth. One player after another had a look at it and fell apart. And Tiger just kept making shots and chewing gum. Yeah, but you know what? There was one more thing that was different this time around. He smoked the young guns by running that old man playbook. Let's face it. At 43, this dude can no longer out-physical and out-drive that field. He's no longer that guy. So the cat wasted all these young dudes with his mind as much as he did his body. In fact, more so. Strategy, experience, IQ carried the day for Tiger. He can no longer out-drive these dudes, but he can outthink them. And he did. And then it was totally real when he got off the 18th green and hugged his kids. That shot of him hugging his father in 1997 and him hugging his kids yesterday, I thought was extremely poetic. You know, like that side by side of those two shots is like some sort of Renaissance painting. doesn't get much more powerful than that. Same with the shot of the players who waited for him to greet him when he came in and then went out to congratulate his mother. Like, this guy earned that moment. He earned it, and he earned it in the hardest way possible. He could have given up back when he couldn't sit or walk. He could have retired. Nobody would have blamed him. He could have said that golf, my best golf, or even any golf, is behind me. My body will not let me play anymore. He could have said he just wanted to hang out with his kids and make it right with them. Nobody would have complained. Everybody would have understood. It would have made sense. But to his credit, in this sense, he didn't. He took the hard, humbling, and humiliating road back. So he earned that moment. Flat out earned the moment. Because he went through one embarrassing moment and round after another. Battled his ass off to get back to yesterday. So nothing but respect for it. In terms of the final round, you don't need me to recap the whole thing. You've already seen it. If you were near a TV, a radio, a phone, you know the moments. Like when Francesco Molinari, who had been a stone-cold killer for the first three rounds, dropped one in the water at 12. He went to the water while Tiger took the safer approach and tied Frankie Molles. And then Molinari went into the water again on 15, and then the cat did this.
So now, with three holes and a putt left in this Masters, Tiger Woods has the lead at minus 13.
And then this on 16 with Michael Phelps right behind him.
And when he won here the last time in 2005, Tiger Woods had a one-shot lead and he stood on his tee. He also had an 8-iron. He does this time as well.
If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you know what I'm talking about. And even if you're not, you probably do. But let's not get this confused. This was not about Tiger sitting around and waiting for everybody to mess up. One guy after another took a run at the jacket and fell back. The leaderboard was beyond crowded with guys who have won and will win again. But when he needed it most, he had his composure. The composure that had not been there in years past. It was there once again, and from 11 to 17, he went par, par, birdie, par, birdie, birdie, par, and then finally, this one.
Waited for years. Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
And there it is. That's the completion of a great comeback. You know, you could argue that winning his 15th at Augusta after everything he's put himself through is his biggest win yet. That's how big that is. It might be so big that it eclipses the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, the U.S. Open on one leg, even the first one at Augusta that made all of this possible. That's how big that was. That was a Tiger win. That was not an Eldrick win. That was Tiger Woods winning the Masters, and it really was amazing. And here's one more thing. As if that win wasn't already enough, there's another rumble. Not about Tiger winning a major, but about Tiger winning a few more. 14 to 15 felt like it would never come. But now that 15's here, people are already rushing to 18. And not just dopes, not just members of the Tiger Honk Nation, not just goofballs, not just dopes, but guys like Brooks Koepka. Koepka said, quote, 18 is a lot closer than people think. He's definitely back, and 18's not far, end quote. There are a lot of caveats and a lot of things that go along with that, so many that it should be left for another day. But the fact is, that conversation is in fact happening, and it's a legitimate conversation. Tiger Woods is back. Tiger Woods is back, and it is surreal. It's unreal, and it's real. Listen up. I want to talk to you about Outer Known. I love this company. You see, finding high-quality clothes that fit great is not always easy. This company was founded by pro surfer and 11-time world champion Kelly Slater. Let's be straight. Who looks better than Kelly Slater? So Kelly's got this company, and the clothing is amazing, and they've got a mission to match, a mission to provide great clothes that do not harm the environment. Outerknown clothes are for people and planet. High quality, sustainable clothes, durable construction, and great fit. I know I'm rocking it already. I've got a sweatshirt that I wear all the time. I've got a sweater from them that I wear all the time. I absolutely love it. Outerknown also only works with factories that pay fair living wages and provide safe working conditions. Again, a company with a great mission as well. I'm going to wear clothing that looks great and feels great, and I know where they're making it and how it's getting made. Go to outerknown.com right now. Enter my code Rome at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your full price order. That's outerknown.com. I'll spell it out. OUTERKNOWN.com. Remember to use my code Rome at checkout. Get 25% off. Check them out today. Outerknown.com. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome and get your 25% off. Robert Lucetich is my guest. Robert, good to have you back. How are you?
Rami, great to be back, mate.
Good to have you. All right, so you've had a few hours, Robert, to reflect and think about what you saw yesterday. What do you think? What do you make of what you saw yesterday?
I mean, remarkable. It's just remarkable. I certainly don't hide from the fact that I did not think Tiger Woods, especially a couple of years ago, was really ever going to play golf again in any meaningful way, much less be winning the Masters. I mean, I don't know that there is a parallel in sports that matches what we've seen. And, you know, he certainly didn't think he was either, by the way. This week, you know, he's always very, very guarded with what he lets out. But, you know, this week he admitted at a golf writer's dinner that he thought he was done 2 years ago, that he needed a nerve-blocking epidural just to walk to the champion's dinner here 2 years ago. So to go from there through the, you know, a month after that, by the way, he has the DUI, which I personally believe is where the road to this green jacket began, because it was his rock bottom when the world saw, you know, that mugshot. And it was just very sad and how far he had fallen. I think that if you look at that, I think he has been on a steady climb since, and he had to find his game, which last year we saw that he started to put it together, wins at the Tour Championship. But again, what's really been missing, 2008 was his last major. Did he have the stones? Did he have the nerves to win a major again? And he answered that emphatically for us yesterday.
Robert Lucetich joining us. He is the author of Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season, and a golf analyst. So, Robert, to that point, how much of yesterday was about Tiger finding his game once again, and in particular the greens he hit? And then how much of this was about Tiger finding his belief in himself again?
Well, I think those two are married. I think that Tiger has always been a confidence player, but everybody always points to his short game and his putter, and that's true because for a very long time, he didn't miss a putt, and that is just the rarest of all things in golf. But where did the confidence come from? It's always come from ball striking for him, and I think that the ball striking is what left him. You know, he started to lose that, certainly even before, I think, the scandal, but somehow the scandal and all the psychological drama, the emotional drama that came with that, he broke up with Hank Haney, his coach, and he started searching. And in golf, you know, anybody that plays golf knows what it's like to search for a swing, to try and find something, and you're often grasping at straws. But what I saw last year at the PGA Championship in St. Louis was, yes, Tiger was horrendous off the tee, but he has been in the past. But his iron play was stellar. He looked relaxed. He was hitting his irons with great trajectory. With, you know, Jack Nicklaus said yesterday, best distance control he's ever seen from anyone with an iron in his hand. And that's Jack Nicklaus saying that, not me. Jack Nicklaus says, and so Tiger has found that, and that's where the confidence comes from. And so if you have that kind of confidence, I mean, he only led in one statistical category this week, and it was greens and regulation. It wasn't putting, it wasn't scrambling, it wasn't driving, it wasn't driving distance. It was greens hit and regulation. And I think if you go back to when, in his pomp, when he was just by miles the best player. Look at the stat of greens and regulation, and he was miles ahead of everybody.
Robert Lucette is joining us. You actually jumped to my next point. I was going to say to you, Robert, was it a vintage Tiger performance, or was that a different Tiger performance than what we've seen from him in the past in the majors?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I think it was vintage in the sense of when he had to hit the big shot. On 16, he had to hit a big shot. On 15, he had to hit a big shot. These were all, you know, he birdies 13, which you have to. He hits it around the corner. That means he's got to turn it right to left. He has struggled mightily over the last half of his career with hitting a draw at will. But he hits that shot on 13, which is a right to left shot, and he hit it down there where he had an 8-iron in. And back in the day, in 1997, he hit an 8-iron into that green too on the Sunday. So it really, in a way, it was vintage. But the other part of it was he sort of picked apart the course. He put himself in positions where he wasn't going to blow up or make mistakes. If you look at that, the 12th hole was pivotal yesterday. Molinari was playing. It wasn't his best, but he was hanging in there. He had a two-shot lead. He hits it in the water on 12. Poulter hits it in the water on 12. Koepka, water on 12. Finau, water on 12. What did Tiger do? He aimed 30 feet left of that, get it to the middle of the green, and two-putt it for par. That is smart play. That's the kind of play that separates the champions. And so, in a sense, you know, yes, it was vintage, but it was also, you know, in a way, he's made this analogy before about, listen, Michael Jordan towards the end had to go to a fadeaway jumper. And in a sense, that was his fadeaway jumper.
Huh. So what about all those other players on 12? I mean, you should point out, I mean, guy after guy, double bogeying 12. Were they seeing something, Robert, that we weren't? Or was that just bad execution?
No, it's experience. The Tiger has played this 20 times. He knows that you don't feel that wind. It swirls down there. It's the trickiest par 3 in the world, certainly in terms of major golf, because you just don't feel that wind. Now, it's a 9-iron. For Koepka, it's probably a pitching wedge, 155 it probably played, somewhere around there. So, but Koepka hit 9-iron and hit it in the water. Anytime you hit it to that pin on the right, it's a sucker pin, and they all hit to it. And they think to themselves, well, if I'm short, I'll be in that bunker, and so I can get up and down from there. But if you're short of the bunker or right of the bunker, you're going in the water. Tiger knew that. They all aimed over there. I think Molinari made the mistake of knowing that there was probably a bit of wind, and he was not sure, but he doesn't have the experience of playing that hole, especially under pressure, so he tried to chip an 8-iron. It was probably a 9-iron, but he tried to chip the 8-iron, and he just didn't hit it hard enough. And I think all of them, you know, you get fooled, and Tiger just wasn't going to be fooled. The other thing is Tiger didn't need to make a birdie on that hole, and he understands that, and I think that's, you know, again, this is experience. It's what separates him from a lot of guys. And he played the shot 30 feet away because he knew he could cover that and he'd be safe.
Robert Lucetich is joining us. So, Robert, there were a lot of different ways to rank yesterday's win among his majors. Like the 97 Masters was significant because the 2000 U.S. Open because of the dominance. But knowing what you know about what Torrey Pines in 2008 meant to him, what is your sense, Robert, as to how Tiger himself would rank his major wins?
Well, look, I asked him this very question yesterday in the press conference, and he said, you know, it's got to be up there, doesn't it? And I think that, in a sense, I separate his wins in terms of sporting excellence and what they mean to him. So if you're talking about sporting excellence, you've got to put the 97 Masters at the top of the list, and that is just because it changed everything, every single thing. He was suddenly, you've got Michael Jordan was sort of getting to the end of his career, Nike and IMG now have this young golfer, Tiger Woods, and he just ticks all the boxes. He is going to be a game changer, not just for golf, but for sport and for culture. And he did that. He was a global superstar, and that was what launched him. But for me, sporting excellence, you talk about sporting excellence, I will not live long enough to see anything greater than the 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. He won by 15, Jim, 15 shots. That is just otherworldly. But then if you look at the personal, Torrey Pines, 2008, that was an ode to his dad. That, you know, that's where the two of them went to see professional golf. And, you know, on a personal level, I think that, you know, and remember too, he basically won that thing on one leg. The doctors told him, you know, shut it down. We'll have surgery. You come back next year. And he said, no chance. And Steve Williams, his old caddy, said to me that of all the tournaments that, you know, Tiger had played and the majors they'd won together, which was 13, he never really addressed a major until it was the next one coming up. He said even the 2001 Masters, where he was going for the Tiger Slam four in a row, he didn't talk about it until it was time for that you know, that event, except for Torrey Pines. As soon as the USGA said they were going to take the US Open to Torrey Pines, Williams said he couldn't, you know, Tiger couldn't stop talking about it, and that's all he talked about, and he obsessed about it. So in a sense, that to me, on an emotional level, he probably puts that one very, very high. And then this one is, again, I think there's an element of greatness to it, the comeback. But for his personal, I think he personally would put this, obviously, in the top four. And maybe he would even put it, you know, higher than, I would say it would probably be second or third. But he might even put it higher because of what he's had to overcome, the fact that it's been 11 years, and the fact that everybody wrote him off.
Robert Lucetic joins us. Robert, before you go, and it's so good to have you back on, I got to ask you this. From a mental standpoint, getting from 14 to 15 was an absolute battle. Is getting from 15 to 18 or even 19 easier than 14 to 15?
It's by far easier, by far. I would watch out for Tiger from now on, because now that he knows he can do it again, and he smells the scent of victory, you know, he knows that he can beat these guys. And I tell you what, I haven't been this excited in a long time. Bethpage, next month, the PGA Championship. He is going to be geared up for that. And then let's not forget, we go back to Pebble Beach in June for the US Open. I really think this is going to be, you know, one of the more exciting years that we've seen in a very long time. And again, 15 was always going to be the hardest one because 14 was just so long ago and so many things have happened, and the scandal and the injuries. You know, now he's got that one under his belt. Watch out for Tiger.
He is a golf analyst and the author of Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season. Robert Lucetic is my guest. Robert, expertly done as always. And so good to have you back, Robert. Thank you very much.
You got it, mate. Let's do it again.
When you need auto parts but you cannot get to a store, visit O'ReillyAuto.com. You can buy your parts online and pick them up in the O'Reilly Auto Parts store of your choice. No shipping costs, easy returns, and convenient pickup on your schedule. Shop your way for the parts you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. The Tiger fanboys, the Tiger bros, Honk Nation, Bag Nation, you know who I'm talking about. This collection of alleged adults, most of whom are male, most of whom, according to their driver's license, are adults, many of whom have families, many of whom were weeping yesterday afternoon. Got a message for y'all, and get a freaking grip. Tiger Woods winning a Masters after 14 years is great. You are the worst. You know the people I'm talking about. The people who weren't just rooting for Tiger, they were rooting against guys like Molinari, Cantlay, Koepka. The people who were practically rooting for Dustin to take another header down a flight of stairs. For Tony Finau to put his foot on backwards again. For rising star Xander to implode on the big stage. I'm talking about you adult dopes who have Tiger Woods posters and figurines in your man caves. Worse yet, the people who refer to a room in their house as a man cave. The same ones who not that long ago were making tired jokes about Perkins waitresses and laughing on the outside, but deep down, crying on the inside because you feel like you betrayed your idol. I know yesterday was big, but David Cruz thinks you need to dial it down, honks.
Second year we lost to Ghana.
I know what it means to you. Do you know what it means to the rest of us? That gal yelling, "We love you," outside the Aaron Hernandez trial, thinks that you need some perspective. Sure, it's one of the best things ever. But you dopes are turning it into one of the worst things ever. I want to enjoy this. I really do. But you bros are making it damn near impossible to do so. And let's be clear about something else. Tiger Woods won the Masters yesterday, not you. Somehow, a number of you have got this all twisted. I know you're excited. Just know this. You didn't do jack. This was something another man did, not you. I'm glad it made you feel good. I really am. But you're annoying and making the rest of us feel like crap while you're making yourself feel good. Stop doing it. I know many of you grew up idolizing Tiger and counting off the majors with him. You had so much invested in this guy. Then he drove his SUV into a fire hydrant and it all fell apart. For him and for you. I've always said this. I understand that sports are the great escape. I'm glad for it. If they weren't, I would not have the job and the life and the career that I've had. I understand that. I get it. But get this. I do have a life. I've always made sure that the quality of my life was not dependent on how my favorite team did. That I controlled my own destiny as much as I could, and I didn't turn it over to the Dodgers or the Lakers or UCLA. That's what you honks are doing with the cat. Your life sucked once he bounced his rig off that tree and Elon bounced that nine off his grill. But now, not only is Tiger back, but you are too. And you're wrecking it for everybody else. And let me say one more thing. I've said this before. Let me say it again. You can pump the brakes a little bit on it being the greatest comeback in the history of the world. It was great. But it may not be the greatest comeback even in the history of golf. This is not Ben Hogan coming back from being hit by a bus. Tiger was not hit by an SUV. He was driving the SUV. But, he did the hard work. And by all accounts, he faced his demons. And according to those around him, he is a different guy. Ricky Fowler told Alan Shipnuck, quote, his back was against the wall, potentially not being able to compete again. It was cool to see him fall in love with the game again. He's Tiger again, but he's a different Tiger, end quote. Charlie Huffman, also to Shipnuck, quote, he's a better person. He's more humble. He's more personable. He's learned from his mistake, and he's come out stronger and better, end quote. See, I like that. I respect that. That's excellent. It really is. He changed. And that's amazing because it is so hard and so rare for people to change. He changed. But Honk Nation hasn't. If anything, Honk Nation is worse now than it was before. Also, being a Tiger fan is fine. Being a Tiger bro is not. Hawk, I'm looking at you. And if you can't tell the difference, you are one of them. And don't get it twisted. This is not some bit for radio. This is the truth. Tiger winning is great. You as an adult doing fist pumps, running around your living room, and crying into your red polo is not great. In fact, it's embarrassing. It's not cool. It's not funny. And don't try and shake it off like you're being ironic. It's just embarrassing. And so is throwing around every piece of golf lingo that you can get your hands on. Like talking about how you pipe shots. Come on, man. Stop doing it. Don't ruin it for the rest of us. We are joined by Blazers head coach Terry Stotts. Terry, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, we can talk about the Masters if you want.
So what do you think about the Masters, Terry? Did you spend much time watching it? What was your reaction?
It was incredible. I just it was good for the game, obviously. Happy for Tiger and all the trials and tribulations he's been through over the past few years. And to reach this, I couldn't have been happier for him. It was a great sports moment.
I appreciate your thoughts on that. It was a great sports moment. It really was. All right, so you're coming off a win over Oklahoma City in game one, Terry, 104-99. I understand that's only one game, but every game in the playoffs is important. How big did that win feel to you?
Well, you're right. Every game's important. When you have home court, there seems like there's a little more pressure to win that first game. You know, you saw on Saturday how many home teams lost on that first day, and you know, with our history being swept the last 2 years, having home court last year, I think that was probably in the back of everybody's mind. But you know, it's going to be a tough series. Last night was competitive. It was physical, and I don't anticipate any changes going forward.
Blazers head coach Terry Stotts joins us once again. Enes Kanter had 20 points. He had 18 rebounds, including two huge offensive boards and a left-handed layup in the final minute and a half of that game. Man, how big was he for you last night?
He was, like Dame said after the game, he's our MVP. He, you know, he did a lot of the dirty work. He had 20 points, and I don't know if we ran a play for him. He just he's involved in pick and rolls. He gets offensive rebounds. He just seems to make plays. To get 18 rebounds against a team like Oklahoma City, to get 7 offensive rebounds against a team like Oklahoma City, really speaks, I think, a lot to his work ethic and just his grittiness.
You know, and Terry's so big on defense, too. Like, he had a reputation on defense, especially in the postseason. I know you've heard about that reputation. In your mind, how fair was the reputation?
Well, I don't know. You know, he's been in the league for a while, so I don't know how he was in Utah and Oklahoma City. All I can speak of as to what he's done for us, and he's given great defensive effort. He's really been locked into our schemes and what we want from him, and he's doing his best to do that. And I think everybody can certainly improve, but certainly based on what I've seen here with us, he's not the defender that everybody said he was.
Terry Stotts joins us. Terry, you mentioned Dame. Damian Lillard said this after the game, and I quote, "What Mo does, what Chief does, it doesn't show up on the stat sheet. Before the end of the game, I just told them I love you all. A lot of things they do go unnoticed," end quote. What does that tell you about Dame as a leader and the bonds on this team?
Well, I've said this for a long time. I think Damian Lillard is the best star leader in the league. He just does it every day. He does it by example. He does it by the things he says in the media, just like that quote. He appreciates his teammates. His teammates appreciate him. You know, I can go on and on about Damian's leadership. And a lot of times I think it gets overlooked because, it's just because of the dynamic sometimes. There's not a lot of drama here. We just go about our business and have a great culture, which he leads. For him to say that about Mo and Chief, it's true. Those guys, this is the fourth year that both those guys have been here. They've been an integral part of what we've done the last 4 years. And when you see it every day, when you see it every game, we all appreciate it here.
We're talking Blazers basketball with the Blazers head coach, Terry Stotts. And then, Terry, there's that Dame shot, right? With a one-point lead. Less than 2.5 minutes to go in the game, he pulls up from beyond deep. He drains that three. What did you think when it left its hand? And then what did you think when it went down?
Well, you know, when he gets clean looks, I think it's going to go in. You know, and along the lines of Steph Curry, you know, those guys are unique shooters that if they are open, you think it has a chance to go in. And Dame started the game with one of those shots, and almost appropriate that he nearly finished the game with one of those shots.
Now, you held OKC to 15% from three. And in particular, Paul George was just 4 of 15. What was your approach on defense last night?
Well, the three-point shot in general, and Paul George particularly, was a focal point. And I'm sure Oklahoma City will look back on some of those shots saying we had good shots. But those were two of our priorities, defensive priorities going into the game was trying to be aggressive with George and not letting him have clean looks. And to be honest, I thought he had too many clean looks for my liking, but it was to compete. And as a team, they didn't shoot the three well. And, you know, I don't think that they'll shoot it that poorly very often, but at least for one game, that was important. And, you know, we looked at the four games that we played them during the regular season. The three-point line was pretty much the determining factor in all four games. We didn't shoot it particularly well, and they shot it well. So the script kind of flipped in this game.
No doubt. Blazers up on OKC, one game to none. Terry Stotts joining us. You know, Terry, the team has battled a number of key injuries this year, including the recent loss of Nurk. You know, I'm curious, how tough has that been for you and the players, and not just from a performance standpoint, but also from an emotional standpoint?
Well, you're right on both levels. I think, first of all, from an emotional level, Nurk is such a good guy, a good teammate, and when you see a guy like Nurk, who's been around and been around the team for a couple years, everybody's a little heartbroken, not only for us but for him. And he was having his best season of his career. I think when you look at a basketball standpoint, he was arguably our second best player, and what he did at both ends of the floor, his plus minus, how the team performed when he was on the court. So it was a blow. And the fact that CJ was out at the same time, I'm really impressed how our guys were able to come together and keep competing the last 10 games of the season with basically those two guys being out.
I would imagine it was great also when Nurk showed up the film session on Sunday. You know, this seems like a really obvious thing to ask or to say, but how different is coaching during the playoffs versus coaching in the regular season? I mean, obviously there's a huge difference between seeing different opponents each time out versus the same one for a series, but how different is the in-game coaching aspect?
Well, I think it changes as the series goes on. Each team, you know your opponent pretty well going into game one, obviously game two, but by the time you get to game three, four, five, there's not a lot of newness or freshness to it, so it's about competing. Playoff basketball, you're not managing the season. A lot of times, you know, fatigue, you have no back-to-backs, travel is minimal, so you're able to just focus on a game. The entire team is locked into the task at hand. You know, I don't think there are any really side issues about playing time and any other drama that you might come across during the regular season. Everybody has a singular focus on what it takes to win that next game.
So what's the biggest key in your mind ahead of game two?
Well, I don't think from a defensive standpoint, the priorities are the same. They had 25 points in transition. That's too much. They had 21 second chance points. That's too much. You know, that's almost half their points right there in what we call easy baskets. So limiting those, we have to do a better job. Paul George and the 3-point shooting will still be a focus. And you know, offensively, I think we can still execute better. We got off to a great start. We were hot from the 3-point line, but we had to grind it out for the next three quarters. So understanding we can execute a little bit better in the half court.
Terry Stotts, my guest. Before I let you go, how about last week the league said goodbye to Dirk. You coached him in Dallas. What was it like to work with Dirk, just being around him?
You know, Dirk is really special to me. He's everything has been said about him, but he was the ultimate professional. He's the ultimate competitor. But what I liked about him most was who he was as a person. He was good to everybody, had a great sense of humor. You know, it couldn't have happened. The way things turned out for him couldn't have happened to a better person. And, you know, his basketball accolades all speak for themselves. But as a person, I feel very fortunate to have known him.
He's such an amazing guy. Such a great, great, great guy. And also, Terry, an amazing work ethic too, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, he had I forget how old he was. So that was, you know, 10 years, 7-8 years ago. So he was still in his early 30s. But, you know, the story of his work ethic is legendary. What he would do in the summer, what he would do in his early years with Steve Nash and coming back at night. You know, he worked extremely hard to get to where he was. You know, he struggled his rookie year. It was a lockout year. And ever since then, he turned it around, but his work ethic never changed.
Appreciate your thoughts on him and everything else. Portland beat Oklahoma City 104-99 yesterday. They're up 1-0 in that series. And game two is tomorrow night at Portland. Terry Stotts, my guest. Terry, thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Listen, time is money. We know this. You have to be so careful what you do with your time. Who's got time for all that traffic? Then the parking. Then lugging all your mail and packages in. It is not easy. In fact, it's a straight hassle. This is why you need Stamps.com, one of my favorite time-saving tools. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office, and it saves you money with discounts that you can't even get at the post office. This is a no-brainer. Save time, save money. Avoid the headache. Avoid the hassle. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle all of that with ease. I have things that have to go. This is the best way for me to save time and money. I love Stamps.com. My only regret is not using it even sooner. I tell everybody I know about it. And right now, you clones can get a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Rome. There's never been a better time to use Stamps.com. Stamps.com, enter Rome. 3 games into the Stanley Cup playoffs, And you want to talk about somebody crapping themselves. The Tampa Bay Lightning are close to making history. The wrong kind of history. The worst kind of history. The kind of history you never live down. Columbus 3, Tampa nothing. As in games. The President's Trophy winners are on their freaking backs. A team that won more regular season games than any other in the history of the NHL just took three straight haymakers to the chin from John Tortorella's crew. Columbus spotted Tampa a three-goal lead in their own house in game one and then scored four straight to shock them and win. Then they jump all over Tampa and beat them down 5-1 in game two on Friday night. Then last night, with Tampa absolutely wounded and desperate to eat a playoff W, instead eats another Columbus fist when the Blue Jackets came home and defended their house with a macho win. Columbus 3, Tampa 1, the wrong side of history, only one game away. Once again, if you are not watching playoff hockey, you need to start. If you're missing what Columbus is doing right now, that's on you, because it's incredible. Like, imagine the Warriors team, Golden State, winning 73 games and then going out in the first round and getting worked in games 1, 2, and 3. Imagine Mike and Scott getting to the playoffs after winning 72 straight with Phil Jackson and getting the hands in round 1. This is what's happening right now with Tampa. And they're not fluky wins either. These aren't fluky bounces. This is Columbus feeding it to the Lightning and doing it over and over and over again. I said it when I previewed the playoffs. The Blue Jackets were not an ordinary 8. These dudes have got talent everywhere. They've got a goalie standing on his head, and they've got a coach with so much swagger and so much confidence, you can see it in every single shift that these guys take. And if you think these dudes are taking their foot off Tampa's throat, then check the Q&A to start Torts' post-game presser after last night's win.
John, you guys are up 3-0 on a great hockey team. What do you think you're most proud of right now when you look at your team and what they're doing?
Well, I'm not too sure I'm interested in talking about how proud I am about the team right now. I'm happy the way we have gone about our business. Did some really good things tonight. But we just got to get – I'm just not going to get into – we have a lot of work to do.
John, your power –
be really careful here.
We have to be really careful here. Who, the team or the media? Or both? Or the rest of the world? Probably took everything in this guy's power not to reach into that dude's chest and put his heart in a doggy bag. What are you most proud of? After three wins. You know, you say that to any coach, you're going to get some blowback, but you ask that question to this guy with this highlight reel, given what happened to them last year, that reporter is lucky that he left the rink alive.
Ask me a question. Don't say talk about it. Ask me a question, please.
Specifically, like, candidly on the ice, what do you think that means?
Holy crap. Give me another question, please.
I couldn't be more disgusted and disappointed.
It's disgusting.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
You're not?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'll speculate.
You speculate and be as sarcastic as you can be, as you usually are.
I don't know what to tell you. Did you ask them? Did you ask them any questions? I don't know why I always have to answer these questions. You should ask them occasionally. No, I don't think the Sabres are a hungry team. I thought we stunk. And I'm not going to give Buffalo any credit.
Have you ever fought before?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah. Why? Are you challenging me now?
No, I'm not challenging you.
Okay.
You're probably beat up in the bus stop most of the time.
I think so, huh?
It's a lack of respect.
What are you asking me? Your questions are way too complicated.
I thought it was probably one of the worst hockey games I've been involved in.
He should be playing in Coast Hockey League, and he takes up National Hockey League. He'll get suspended. Who cares?
You're a great representative of the city. You know that?
Will you let these other guys... Just go stand somewhere else, would you please?
No, I won't.
Jennifer.
Are they in the room?
Yeah.
What'd they say? Tell me. Let me ask some questions here. What'd they say?
Right now, that's a huge goddamn goal he scored in the first period. That's how I describe it.
John Tortorella has gone over to the Calgary Flames hallway.
Okay, he's got to calm down.
Yep.
Pretty much sums it up, huh?
He shit his pants. He was puking. He was doing everything.
My gosh.
If you think that I'm just looking for a reason to play that montage, you're right. That's incredible. That thing gets more amazing to me every time I hear that. Hey, listen, I do have a crystal ball, though, right? Didn't I say Didn't I clearly say that Columbus was not an ordinary eight? Didn't I clearly and unequivocally state that they have skill and depth and that they were a tough draw? And that not only are they talented, they've got that scar tissue from last year. They know they can't let up. Remember last year, they were back home after having the Caps down 2-0. They had Washington on the ropes in overtime in game three with a chance to go up 3-0 on them. You don't forget that. I remember very clearly L.A., the Kings, before they won it all, had Montreal on the ropes way back in the day. My good friend Roy Mulacher has never, ever lived that down. Never gotten over that. That's what happened to Columbus last year. They had the Caps on the ropes, and then they sat back and they watched them march all the way to the cup. That's why Torts said, we got to be really careful here. That's why nobody's popping bottles or shaking hands. It's because the closeout game is always the hardest one to win. Yes, the 3-0 comeback is one of the rarest in all sports, but it does happen in hockey. Once in 42, once in 75, and twice recently, the Kings ran down the Sharks a couple of years back, something I obviously saw coming. And then a couple of years before that, Philly did it to Boston. Not dead, can't quit. Not dead, can't quit. But Tampa's going to wish they were dead if they get swept out. I'm telling you, you can't win 4 in one night, man. One shift at a time. My guest is Kevin Weeks. Kevin, great to have you back. How are you?
Thanks, Romy. Great to see you're back, too. I know you enjoyed some much-needed downtime, so I'm sure you're recharged and refreshed and feeling good.
I feel great, Kevin. Thanks for saying so. All right, so a lot to talk to you about in the NHL right now, but let me start with this. Kevin, what was your reaction when you saw Toronto's Nazem Kadri do what he did in Game 2 against Boston?
Low percentage move by Nazem Kadri. You know, somebody that I know from back home, being from Toronto originally, but I've known him since he's come into the league. He's got a lot of skill, tons of talent. This Leafs team is stacked, as is the Boston team. And, you know, he's slotted right now as a third-line center. He scored 32 goals last year, only 16 this year. But he's a very, very important piece to this Leafs team because he has the skill of a top-six forward, but he's not afraid to play in the playoffs. And the Leafs aren't a team that has that much sandpaper in their group. So by having him there, he plays a critical role on this team, especially based on this matchup with the Boston Bruins that are the more powerful, more physical team. And what he did the other night was just unacceptable. I mean, it's just a poor play choice. I know that some things had escalated during the game and he felt that he had gotten meat earlier. I know that he was coming to the aid, or so he thought, of Patrick Marleau, courtesy of a hit by Jake DeBrusk, which is a clean hit. But at the end of the day, you need to have that emotional maturity. You need to have that, and especially anytime, but especially in the playoffs when you're being counted upon. And as Scott Hartnell and I said on NHL Tonight on the NHL Network, literally following that game, you're looking at the guys in the locker room, to the left, to the right, straight across from you. You're looking at the trainers, the coaching staff, the entire organization. And one thing when you're in a dressing room, it's a heightened level of accountability. How do you let the guys down? I mean, we've all made mistakes. Guys have, you know, done things that aren't necessarily the best decisions. But in a critical time in the Stanley Cup playoffs, in Game 2 in Boston at the Garden, it's just a play that you can't make. And that must have been a long plane ride back up to Toronto. I know it's only an hour flight, but that must have felt much longer for Nazem Kadri, because he certainly let his teammates and his staff and the coaching staff down with that poor decision.
Kevin Weeks joining us. Well said. Now we're talking about him getting ejected for a cross check. When you look at what he did in last year's playoffs against Boston, which earned him 3 games, and now he does this, in your mind, what is an appropriate punishment then?
For me, first of all, you just laid it out, Romy. He's a four-time repeat offender. He's been suspended 4 times in his career. And if it's me and I'm running player safety, I'm handing out 20 gamers like they're candy, just like they're Pop-Tarts or Sweet Tarts or Sour Keys or Nerds. That's what I'm doing. And in this specific case, it'd be a 10 for sure. It'd be nothing less than a 10, because clearly there's a higher rate of recidivism here, right? This is the 4th time he's already been suspended. And now this will end up being the 5th time. So clearly he hasn't learned. And I don't know, but to me, a lot of that stuff, I go back to it. Like, a lot of that stuff, there has to be a higher level of accountability. And, you know, the club can do so much. The league can do so much. But I think a lot of that just starts from within. And, you know, it's got to be on his parents, too, to be able to say, listen, son, like, it's embarrassing. You can't do this anymore. Because the first 4 times that you've been suspended by the league from player safety, it hasn't worked. And now, you know, you don't want to have these types of stains and these types of blights on our last name, so to speak. And the same thing on the team. Like somebody on the squad, and I know for a fact, having played with Brendan Shanahan, with the Rangers and the Devils, Hall of Famer, who's the Leafs team president, I know for a fact Shanny's had conversations with him. So at this point now, to me, those conversations need to get a lot more serious and intense in nature. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see if they start, being the Toronto Maple Leafs, mulling their options as to what to do with him on a go-forward basis come the offseason, because this is just irresponsible.
I was going to ask you about that, but you just answered it exactly right. Kevin Weeks joining us. All right, so the Islanders, Kevin, beat the Penguins in overtime in Game 1. Since then, they've outscored them 7-2. They've got a 3-0 series lead. How impressed have you been with the way they've handled their business thus far?
Super impressed. Literally, I just got back to the house in Jersey from Long Island. You must have a tracking device in my car. but literally, just got in the door. But in saying that, I mean, the fans in Long Island have been great. You know, I got to start with the team. Honestly, Lou Lamoriello, and I would probably say Jim Rutherford of the Penguins, ironically enough. I played for them both. They're two of the hardest working senior management people I've seen in hockey, without question. And Lou Lamoriello specifically with the Islanders, I mean, between him and Barry Trotz, they've literally transformed this franchise since the summer. And I, having played for Lou, I know a lot of the old school family values, old school Italian values that he brings to the table: accountability, professionalism, team first, collective, you know, all those different things. He brings that to the table, and he's been able to impart that on that team. So has Barry Trotz and the entire coaching staff. What they've done so far this year, Romy, is nothing short of miraculous. This is a miraculous transformation. That's in the absence of John Tavares, who's now playing with the Leafs. What a year. But it all comes back to the attention to detail. It does. And I got to say this right now, Barry Trotz, who won the Stanley Cup last year as head coach of the Washington Capitals, for a lot of you football fans out there, he's having a Bill Belichick-esque impact on the New York Islanders right now. And certainly with them being the best defensive team in the league and them shutting down the Pittsburgh Penguins, which are a three-time Stanley Cup team with Sidney Crosby at the helm as a player, they've been able to neutralize them. And I think that's a testament to the players, of course, and the staff, the different players I've talked to on their team. But I think a lot of it goes back to the credit, too, with Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz. It's been amazing.
Kevin Weeks joining us. I think that Belichick analogy is very, very good. Now, as long as we're talking, Kevin, about teams on the verge of sweeps, then you have what Columbus is doing to Tampa Bay and what they've done to them in the first three games. I know the Lightning were down a couple of key players yesterday, but how do you explain what we've seen so far in that series?
You know, when they were here the other day, last Friday or two Fridays back, the Blue Jackets against the Rangers at the Garden. I went to the game, had a chance to speak to different people. JD, John Davidson, their president, Yarmo, their GM, coach, Torts, everybody, players. And I said to those guys, listen, if you guys play your style, and their captain specifically, Nick Foligno, I said, if you guys play your style, you guys can match up with Tampa. But you got to play your style. And they're doing that to beyond. I mean, they're playing a responsible game. They're playing from the middle of the rink out as opposed to from the out in. That allows them to defend much better because, you know, Tampa's an explosive offensive team, to put it mildly. Tampa's a record-setting, record-tying team for most wins in a regular season with the 95-96 Detroit Red Wings by way of Tampa's season this year to finish first overall in the league. We know how stacked Tampa is. We know how deep they are. But the Jackets are doing a great job of defending. They're physical. They're playing. They're taking away the time and space from Tampa to be able to make plays. Tampa can't get to the areas of the rink that they're comfortable to generate offense. They're also hammering them on the forecheck. They're owning the boards. And quite frankly, Romy, they're more intense. And this is why people don't understand. I say this all the time. You always have to respect your opponent, number one, and this is why they play the games. We can pontificate. We can speculate. We can do all kind of late. None of it matters until you get out there and perform. And I'll tell you one thing. After that first period in Game 1 where Tampa came out gangbusters and then they started feeling cocky about it, they're like, oh, we're good. We're good, fellas. We're good in here. We're good. They let their foot off the gas pedal. Back came Tampa. They stormed all the way back. They won the game in overtime. Or, sorry, back came Columbus. They won that game in overtime. They haven't looked back since. And Columbus, quite frankly, just wants it more. They're more dedicated. Tampa is the deeper team. Columbus is the team playing with the deepest level of commitment in this series so far. That's why they're up 3-0. Sergei Bobrovsky, their goalie, has been awesome. Matt Duchene's been tremendous. Panarin's been tremendous. And I got to say, Torts has done an awesome job with them so far this playoffs.
Studio analyst for NHL Network, Kevin Weeks, former NHLer, joining us for a few more moments. Torts has done an amazing job. Saturday, Kevin, I saw you tweet that when it comes to coaching vacancies, Patrick Waugh should get a look. Break that down. What makes him such an effective coach?
Yeah, thanks, Romy. The big thing for Patrick Waugh, obviously, his playing experience is arguably second, and really second to none, only to Marty Brodeur, who bests him by most wins ever in the history of the league for a goalie. But Patrick has won. He's been a winner. He was the Jack Adams winner in his first year, which is coach of the year in the NHL, his first year in Colorado as a head coach. But what I also like about Patrick is he went back to youth hockey. He started coaching in youth hockey with his sons, like Pee Wee Bantam, I'm talking, like driving up and down in a minivan and coaching, and before going to coach in Major Junior in Quebec, in Quebec City with the Quebec Ramparts, and then coming on to coach the Avalanche. I thought he was great in his first year. I think a lot of guys in that group needed some maturing to do in that second year, and consequently, he ended up parting ways with the Avalanche. But I feel his grasp on the game, I feel the fact that he's innovative, he's gutsy, he's passionate, and he works hard. He understands and knows and lived what it means to win, obviously at the NHL level with the Avalanche in Montreal, but also at the Major Junior level with Quebec. He's helped develop players that are currently in the NHL now that played for him, like Radulov, who's playing in Dallas right now, Anthony Duclair, who's in Ottawa right now. He's helped develop those players, and he understands today's player. And he's got that jam. He's got the name recognition. I don't really think that there's any blemishes. If I'm a team, I know that he hasn't been referenced publicly. I see that we're looking at a lot of potential coaches in terms of a lot of the more notable names that people would expect. But I think that Patrick Waugh is an amazing candidate. And another person I think that'd be a great, great candidate is Ralph Kruger. He was the chairman of Southampton in the British Premier League, in the English Premiership. Soccer, yes, as in football. But a longtime coach, coaching the NHL. He coached Team Europe at the World Cup of Hockey up in Toronto 3 years ago and led Team Europe to the final against Team Canada. And he was incredible with that group. Very measured, very professional. So those are two potential coaching candidates that haven't been getting a lot of public play in terms of name recognition. But on the basis of the ability to do the job and their quality as people, I think that they're being highly underlooked, if anything, right now, let alone overlooked. They're being underlooked right now.
Kevin Weeks, our guest. Remember, you can watch Kevin on NHL Network's NHL Tonight, which is airing live before and after every single game of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and NHL Network analyst and more than 14 years in professional hockey. Kevin, so good to have you back, man. Really appreciate you, and I appreciate the conversation. Roby, thank you.
Thanks so much, man. Thanks to you fans that tune in to watch us on the NHL Network. And one quick one, Kendall Coyne of Team USA's World Cup winning, World Championship winning, I should say, Team USA hockey women's team. Kendall Coyne will be joining us in studio on the NHL Network tonight, all the way back from Finland from the World Championships. She might have some champagne in her eyes, but that's okay. It's earned. Make sure you check us out tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
Good night now!